Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Harmeet Dhillon, and I am counsel for the appellants in this matter. And I respectfully request to reserve 10 minutes of my argument time for rebuttal if necessary.
All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. I am honored in this matter to represent four Californians of faith: Congregant Wendy Gish, the lead plaintiff, and Pastors Patrick Scales, James Dean Moffitt, and Brenda Wood. As Mr. Lamandrea has ably argued before me, for the past 10 months, Californians have had their fundamental First Amendment rights severely burdened and restricted by their own government. For 302 days as of today, faithful congregants have been prevented from exercising the freedoms and liberties guaranteed under the Constitution of the United States on an equal basis as secular activities. Continuously, in varying degrees over the past year, under the original executive order, which is frontally challenged, facially and as applied, in our complaint on behalf of faithful Californians, that is Executive Order N-33-20, Governor Newsom has decreed that the temples of God be either shut or severely limited, while the doors to the temples of commerce remain open throughout this time period and widely trafficked, with few restrictions, and certainly not restrictions comparable to the restrictions on people of faith. In the recent Supreme Court decision of Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn versus Cuomo, the court clearly established what the appellants have been arguing since the beginning of this case. And this was one of the first cases filed to challenge the COVID restrictions against people of faith in California. Namely, the court established that the Constitution does not countenance this type of two-tier discriminatory treatment of religion that places, from the very get-go, all religious activity at a lower level of respect and recognition by the government than other so-called essential aspects of our lives. And the Supreme Court very clearly established the type of scrutiny that should be applied in the face of dozens of court rulings throughout the United States and this court and other courts, which have applied different levels of scrutiny. And the court mandated that strict scrutiny should be applied to these restrictions on religion. The Supreme Court also importantly struck down the hard caps that have been applied here in California and have more and regularized the treatment of capacity control, which I would agree is an important distinction in stopping the spread of a disease, to commercial endeavors. And that is something that is a fundamental difference between the state of the law now in New York versus what we have here in California, as Mr. Lamandrea has argued. And it is our view, Your Honors, that the Brooklyn case demands remand of this case, reversal and remand of this case to the district court for proceedings consistent with that on these multiple grounds. California and its counties.
What is exactly before us today? I confess I am confused by the procedural posture. I understand we're now down to one appeal from a final judgment, but I'm not sure what issues are teed up by the final judgment. So could you identify what you think is at issue today?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for the question, Judge Clifton. What is at issue here is there has only been one oral hearing in this case. And in that hearing, which was on a motion for a temporary restraining order and a request for a preliminary injunction or order to show cause.
I'll stop you there, because where's the request for a preliminary injunction? I never found that.
The request is for an order to show cause that a hearing on a motion for a preliminary injunction should be held. It's right there in the caption. It's in the transcript of the hearing. And
was there ever a hearing or an order on a motion for a preliminary injunction?
There was no hearing on that as requested. The court refused to order the hearing that was requested. And indeed, Your Honors, when you look at the short order on the temporary restraining order that was issued by the court, which is in the record, 8 pages long, the court gives such the back of the hand to the arguments by basically focusing on this novel minimal scrutiny analysis that the court fashioned out of the Jacobson case of 1905, that I understand why the court did not issue a order to show cause on a preliminary injunction. It is clear from the court's 8-page ruling on the temporary restraining order, which was after a lengthy hearing where all parties were heard, that the court would not have issued a preliminary injunction.
The denial of a TRO is not appealable. You don't have an order denying the preliminary injunction before us, as I understand it, but the district court dismissed your original complaint as moot because it challenged only the March date order, but granted you leave to amend, and you never amended.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. We did not amend in this matter because it became clear very quickly, although we did seek leave to amend, it became clear immediately following, within days of the dismissal as moot, which we did argue against. We did not get an opportunity from the court to have a hearing on the Rule 12 motions. We did brief them. The court, without argument, dismissed this case as moot on the basis of the government's representations that the original orders had substantially changed, which we contest today and we contested at the time. The court immediately went back to a very repressive regime with respect to religion within days. And, it is clear to me that the temporary change of that order that was then persuaded the court to dismiss our case prematurely as moot. There have been so many rapid changes in the underlying regulations, not the law, but the regulations that have come under the governor's original order, which we challenged and which we continue to challenge and which is still in effect, Your Honors. And that is the key point here, is that I fail to fathom how a lawsuit that challenges an order that remains in effect, not a statute, not something that was legislatively reversed, not something that has even been substantially modified by the governor, can be moot at this time. The governor's original order, which divides...
So is that the issue that's before us now? Is it strictly about the decision as to mootness?
No.
I started this by asking, what do you think is before us now? And now I think I'm getting an answer that says that you object to the decision by the district court to dismiss on the ground of mootness. That's something you're challenging. Is that correct?
That is one thing we are challenging. And we are also challenging the decision on the temporary restraining order, which does fall
well,
into the exception.
Well, I go back. I never found a decision on a temporary, on a preliminary injunction, and a decision on a temporary restraining order isn't ordinarily appealable. So I'm not sure what the other issue you're trying to push in front of us is, particularly given that I couldn't find any factual record that would have supported the entry of the order in the first place. Is there any factual record here you complain that you weren't given a chance to be heard, but I look at what's in the record and I don't find anything that I could point to say this justifies concluding that the district court abused its discretion.
Well,
what
Honor,
is there in the record?
You use the word ordinarily, and ordinarily is important because a denial of a temporary restraining order is ordinarily not appealable unless it is tantamount to a preliminary injunction hearing. And that is our position.
But I never saw you asked for a preliminary injunction. I looked and didn't find something called motion for a preliminary injunction. I'd be thrilled if you could give me an ER reference that lets me see that, but I haven't found it.
Your Honor, our original motion for a temporary restraining order is captioned a motion for a temporary restraining order and for an order to show cause that a preliminary injunction should not issue. And it was also requested orally in addition to that at the hearing and was acknowledged by the court as a request. And the court indeed, in its 8-page denial of a motion for a temporary restraining order, thoroughly dealt with the issues that were raised by our motion for a temporary restraining order to enjoin the very executive order that remains in effect in California and pursuant to which all of these other seven different types of regimes that we have seen come and go every few weeks in California have been enacted. And that order remains in effect. That order purports to criminalize a First Amendment activity of worship in the state of California.
And it, just a second. I mean, the substantive arguments, I think we're all well aware of now. We just spent an hour going through them with the South Bay case. But so are you asking us to reverse the district court holding that the case was moot?
Yes, I am. I am asking you to reverse that holding. I am asking you to reverse and vacate the judgment. And we would.
And then you start all over. Then you would go back, and then you would have to file a preliminary injunction and make a motion for a preliminary injunction and give an evidentiary basis for that motion.
I don't disagree with that, Your Honor. But what is critical is that had the court applied the correct standard at the beginning, which it refused to do, and in fact made up a standard of minimal scrutiny, which is not based in any of the United States Supreme Court's or this court's last many decades of jurisprudence, we would not be in the position of all of the other cases that have come before this court over the past several months, the cases that have taken up time in the United States Supreme Court. And so if the correct standard were applied and correct guidance were given by this court, we would hope that a different result would apply. And of course, at the time of the original hearing, we are talking about April in the early weeks of these restrictions. I think everybody here listened to the governor say 2 weeks to flatten the curve. I'm a person of faith. I, with many others, did that. But then we began to see these discriminatory applications that allowed people to shop for alcohol, marijuana, go to Costco, which any experienced shopper will know is by no means a rapid in and out process. And those of us who are faithful were told you may not worship. And that is the basis on which we came to the court. And at that time, Your Honor, a circumstance that has now changed, the counties were actually threatening to arrest congregants who congregated in a parking lot within their vehicles to hear their pastor speak from a far distance. Upon the filing of this lawsuit, that particular restriction was rolled back, and subsequently the counties have indeed eliminated their own special interpretations of the governor's order, but they have pledged, both of the county defendants in this matter, have pledged to continue the restrictions on that the governor has implemented, and that, as I said, change every few weeks.
Let me ask you to focus, because time is limited. I've asked you, and I'll repeat this one, to point me to what in the record represents a motion for a preliminary injunction. As I said, I haven't found it. I ask you to point me what in the record would support the entry by us of the injunctive or restraining relief you apparently seek to justify directing the district court to enter a certain kind of order, or to enter it ourselves, I guess. Because what I haven't found in looking in the record is either a motion for a preliminary injunction or record evidence to support the entry of any restraining order. Can you point me to either one of those?
Your Honor, I can only point you to what I've already said, which is that the original...
But so far, it sounds to me like the answer is no, that you can't.
Well, if you consider a mention of it in the pleadings, as I pointed out, and if you consider an oral...
Well, if you give me that reference, that's something. I'm not sure that mentioning and passing in pleadings... I mean, I suspect your complaint probably sought that relief, but that's not a motion for a preliminary injunction.
Your Honor, there is no motion for a preliminary injunction in this matter. There is a request for...
Okay, so finally we have that concession. I appreciate that. It took us a little long to get there, but we've got that acknowledgement that we don't have a motion for a preliminary injunction, and the district court never ruled on such a motion. Part two, what evidence is there in the record that would support either an entry by us or directions by us to the district court to grant you the relief you appear to seek?
The face of the governor's executive order is a violation of the United States Constitution. The order
that's
by
it?
The governor.
That's all you got? You have no evidence that compares the restrictions imposed by the governor on a place of worship versus the restrictions applied by these to other activities. I mean, what we just argued about the preceding hour. Do you have any evidence to add to the evidence that was tossed in front of us in that case?
I have no evidence beyond the evidence that was introduced in the prior case, Your Honor, and that is because of the timing of this case. And indeed, at the
well, let me stop that. You're starting. You've moved to the excuse, but it seemed to me this case was being developed through the summer, and you made an affirmative election not to take advantage of the leave to amend that was granted, and continued to fight over the mootness issue. But I want to get to the mootness issue, because I'm not saying I disagree with you on that, but I don't see how you could possibly get any other relief based on the record you put in front of us in this case, because there's nothing here that supports the argument that this is a discrimination against the exercise of free this is a restriction on the free exercise of religion. Well, except for your broad characterizations.
Well, you may disagree with those characterizations, Your Honor. It is our argument, and we believe it is supported by the record of the governor's order that decrees certain activities are essential and certain activities are not. And the governor decreeing in 2 days after his executive order, that which is part of what we filed suit on, that the only type of worship that was allowed at that time was worship by digital means. The only type of workers of a church that are considered, or other place of worship that are considered to be essential, are those who stand in front of a computer screen like myself right now, delivering remote services, which do not meet the religious needs of tens of millions of faithful Americans and millions of them here in California. And I think that's been well developed why that is, Your Honor. And so the very scheme...
Well, but you're arguing about things that have been changed. I mean,
but
we're
they haven't
to
been
look
changed.
At...
They haven't been changed. Well, the governor's executive order has not been changed. The governor's executive order that applies to the governor himself the ability to decree who is essential and who is not in California does not make appropriate accommodations for fundamental constitutional protected speech in California, and that itself on its face is a constitutional violation that persists to this day. And
I have to try to get you to focus once again, because the argument as I've understood it, and the argument as it's been developed already, is not that a line is being drawn between what is essential and what is not. It's whether the regulation is narrowly tailored to put up with, to allow activities that are not evaluated to pose too great a risk for community spread. Is your argument something other than that?
No, that is the second point of the argument. We believe the threshold argument that the governor's executive order itself is unconstitutional based on its framework is an argument. And then one can have arguments about the specifics of the various regulations that have come in under that. And throughout this 302 days, the government has discriminated in its fine-tuning of that order in various different, I think, 7 different orders that the health officials in California have issued pursuant to the governor's discriminatory order, have continued to make invidious distinctions. But even in this case, at the very beginning of this litigation, the government made the argument that based on church contamination in South Korea and contaminations that have occurred in other countries and anecdotes from situations where people who were uneducated about this disease, which was all of us in April of 2020, it was a basis for these distinctions. Now, I have heard the argument and I have seen all the declarations, and I have, you know, we see that battle of the experts with respect to the science behind these distinctions, but fundamentally the government's position is no different today than it was before, and that many courts had hastily accepted, which is going to church is like some form of entertainment, like Coachella. Coachella has been mentioned in some of these cases, you know, outdoor entertainment, singing and so forth, or a sports event. Those are optional to most people of faith. They are certainly not the same as the dictate from a faith to worship regularly, worship communally, accept the body of Christ, and all of the other things that require gathering in the case of an Orthodox Jewish congregation in Minyan. So we're all familiar with those, and we can disagree about them, but the governor from the beginning of this COVID shutdown decreed those to be not as important, and he has underscored that repeatedly. Yes, Your Honor.
I want to know what your argument on mootness, because as far as I can tell, that's the only thing you have in front of us, is your argument that the case is not moot.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the mootness, our position is that under the Rosbrook case in the Ninth Circuit from 2014, none of the factors are met here that would make this case moot. This is not a legislative alteration. This is a policy change. The policy change that the government relies on does not change the original executive order that is frontally attacked in our complaint. But the factors are five. Is the policy change broad in scope and unequivocal in tone? It is not. Effectively, the same restrictions have come in various different shades. And even when you have, and by the way, just to be clear, the government sets up a straw man argument that says that we are now attempting to appeal all of these seven subsequent orders. That is not the case, Your Honor. The reason that we cite those is to demonstrate to the court that the government cannot establish that the changes in policy, the incremental changes in policy that it has repeatedly made every few weeks to avoid, frankly, a judicial scrutiny, I believe, is one of the reasons that they've done that. They don't meet this test. They have not made permanent changes. They have not made broad changes in scope. The changes have never been unequivocal. If anything, the governor repeatedly warns us, and these orders repeatedly warn us, that they can be changed at any time if the rates of infection, whether they're related to churches or houses of worship or otherwise, can put us back in the box. The second factor is, do the changes fully address all of the objectionable measures alleged by the plaintiff? That has never been the case. The plaintiffs in this case continue to challenge the executive order, and they continue to challenge hard caps. They continue to challenge second-class status of people of faith. Whether the plaintiff's case was the catalyst for the new policy, I actually doubt the government would argue that the plaintiff's case in this case was the catalyst for any of these. The government, in fact, has studiously stated that it makes changes based on science and not based on any particular lawsuit. How long has the policy been in place by the time the appeal is heard? The policies change every few weeks. The policy might be different by the time we go to bed tonight in this state. And whether the government has followed its new policy thus far? No, it has not. Within 5 days after the order that the government cited to dismiss this case as moot, the government changed the framework entirely. And it has changed that framework, I think, at least 3 to 4 more times after that. And one can predict it will continue to change that framework based on the statements by the government. So none of those factors in the Rosbrook case are met. And accordingly, this case is not moot. And indeed, similar analysis was brought to bear in the Brooklyn Diocese case, where the court also faced New York's arguments that because a particular house of worship had been moved from one tier to the next, that ergo there was a mootness analysis. The court said, no, it is not. All of these changes in policy under COVID are fleeting. They are subject to rapid change. And in fact, these both states have rapidly changed these. And so that's the lay of the land. And I respectfully would submit that if this case is moot because the government keeps changing its framework and its mind, then it is difficult to see any case, including my colleague, Mr. Lemandry's case, which has, in fact, he made the tactical decision in that case, which I am also counsel in, to amend the complaint twice. And yet we are both in the same position. The courts have continued to refuse to issue injunctions on plainly unconstitutional orders that are really very, very similar, if not worse, than the orders at issue in New York. And I think the attempts by the government to distinguish the New York scheme and the New York orders are lacking. And so we would respectfully request our opportunity with this mootness decision that resulted in a judgment being vacated to go back and litigate this case using the proper strict scrutiny framework that should apply. And yes, at that point, Your Honors, we may very well decide to amend our complaint to wrap in all of the developments that have occurred, but it was an exercise in futility at the time that was originally presented.
All right, so counsel, what you want us to do is reverse and remand.
Yes, Your Honors, that is correct.
Right, why don't you reserve the remaining time and let's hear from the state of California.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Deputy Attorney General Todd Grabarski again on behalf of the state. The court should affirm the district court's dismissal and deny plaintiff's apparent request for an injunction in the first instance. And I think walking through the timeline might be helpful to the court, given the somewhat complicated procedure that's in discussion with opposing counsel. I think the court is right that plaintiffs never, or I know the court is right that plaintiffs never moved for a preliminary injunction. In April, upon filing suit, they moved for a temporary restraining order, and defendants only had 3 days to garner the evidence and to oppose that motion. The court held a one-hour hearing, took no evidence. No evidence was heard at that hearing, and denied the TRO. Plaintiffs never sought, thereafter for a preliminary injunction. They never conferred with counsel for the state or other defendants to stipulate that that TRO order was tantamount to a PI, or stipulate that a PI could not issue. The district court's order denying the temporary restraining order never mentioned a preliminary injunction at all. Nothing foreclosed plaintiffs from moving for a preliminary injunction, even on their original complaint. As the case went forward, it wasn't until July when the district court dismissed, and I think as the court recognized, with leave to amend plaintiff's original complaint because the regulatory framework had changed. Rather than amending, plaintiffs moved for a reconsideration of that order, which they're entitled to do. Again, the court denied that motion for reconsideration, did not foreclose the possibility that plaintiffs could amend their complaint, again, to challenge the regulatory framework. And the mooting event that took place after April and before July, when the district court dismissed the complaint as moot, was the state's reopening of worship services. Since May, plaintiffs and everyone in California has been able to worship in person outdoors. And that's been unchanged since May. I suppose that's eight months ago. And then in June, the state lifted any numerical restrictions for outdoor worship at all. So that's been the case since middle of June. Plaintiffs are correct that indoor worship was re-restricted beginning in July, but that doesn't change the fact that the state implemented an entirely new regulatory framework in August with the blueprint, which remains in effect today, that, as we've discussed for about an hour at the previous hearing, that's the framework that controls the First Amendment analysis in this case.
Just so that I'm clear on this, the mooting event, so the complaint challenged the March order, which did not allow indoor any worship services.
Did not allow in-person worship services. Remote and drive-in services were permitted since day one.
So in March, the March order did not allow in-person religious services at all.
That's correct.
And that's what they challenged. And the reason it's moot was that in May, the state reopened in-person religious services.
Yes, Your Honor. That's what the district court found in July.
That complaint. So you're arguing the district court was correct, because that is a mooting event for the claim, the only claim that's in the complaint.
Yes, Your Honor. The district court was correct. And the district court certainly did not abuse its discretion in affording plaintiffs leave to amend. Defendants never argued that the entire case should be dismissed with prejudice without leave to amend, simply that the original complaint, the original pleading, the operative pleading, didn't challenge the operative restrictions. Plaintiffs never alleged in their original complaint why they might be harmed by only being permitted to worship indoors. That remains today, that the plaintiffs never argue that their religious mandate requires them to worship indoors in their sanctuary, or that worshiping outdoors is simply infeasible. It might be the case that that's true. Defendants aren't arguing that. I think that's the showing that South Bay has made. But we don't know, and certainly the district court didn't know. Also draw the court's attention to the district court's ruling in Harvest Rock, which found exactly that, that the plaintiffs never explained why they were harmed by the state's allowance of outdoor worship services. Again, it might be the case, but it's a requirement to demonstrate Article III standing that plaintiffs make that showing. Plaintiffs have the burden of showing, you know, for the purposes of standing and also certainly for the purposes of obtaining a preliminary injunction. Plaintiffs argue that, and then just to finish out the timeline, after the district court in October denied reconsideration, counsel for the state approached plaintiff's counsel, said, would you like to amend the complaint given that the court's permitting that? Counsel for plaintiffs said no, and then when we conferred with counsel about moving for an entry of judgment based on that representation, counsel affirmed that they would not oppose entry of judgment, and they didn't oppose entry of judgment. So we're in a situation where plaintiffs have had every opportunity to amend their complaint, to explain why they are harmed by the currently operative restrictions and why those currently operative restrictions are unconstitutional. Plaintiffs in their briefings and today argue that Executive Order 33-20 remains on the books. That is true. However, that executive order says nothing about worship services. It certainly doesn't set forth the regulatory framework that's in place today. At the time, in March, again, when plaintiffs filed their complaint and moved for a TRO, all in-person worship was shut down. Since then, subsequent executive orders and subsequent orders from the public health officer has permitted in-person worship and set forth the currently operative regulatory scheme. I'll note that the Supreme Court and other circuit courts have agreed that in this situation, claims are moot. This was the situation in the Elim Romanian Pentecostal Church case before the Supreme Court, which rejected an application because a few days before that application for an injunction, state of Illinois had changed the regulatory framework. This was all, and we've cited these cases on page 32 of our answering brief. This is also the case in the Sixth Circuit in the Maryville Baptist Church case, Fourth Circuit in the Lighthouse Fellowship case, the Fifth Circuit in the Spell versus Edwards case, and also if the Supreme Court's denial touches on this issue in the Danville Christian Academy case. Plaintiffs appear to heavily rely on the voluntary cessation exception to mootness as articulated in Rosebrock. I'll note that Rosebrock certainly did not consider, the outcome of that case found that the voluntary cessation exception did not apply, that mootness did foreclose relief in that case, and the mooting event, far from a legislative action and far from a complete overhaul of the detailed regulatory framework, was a single email from the director of a Veterans Administration campus. And this court found that that single email was enough to moot plaintiff's claims, and that voluntary cessation did not apply. Going through the Rosebrock factors, broad in scope, unequivocal in tone, the blueprint certainly covers the whole, nearly, I would say, all secular and religious activities that could operate in the state. It certainly addresses the objectionable measures that plaintiffs raised in their complaint, which is the total ban on in-person worship services. That was the case in March and was no longer the case in May. The blueprint has been in place since August, which in the life of this pandemic is, quite lengthy. It's nearly half of the time that this pandemic has been raging the country and the world. And certainly the objectionable conduct hasn't recurred. Again, outdoor worship services in unlimited numbers has been permitted to take place since June in any part of the state. Touching on plaintiffs, claims.
Let me ask you to go beyond. So the biggest difference is the outdoor services, that there are no restrictions on outdoor services. And help me, please, because I'm not as familiar with the counties involved here and where they stand in the tiers. Was there a period of time over the past, 10 months that we're talking about, during which either of these counties were in a tier other than tier one of the blueprint?
Yes, Your Honor. From late May to mid-July, San Bernardino and Riverside counties were permitted to worship indoors up to 100 people or 25% capacity.
So at the time the district court took up the and ordered dismissal based on mootness, the difference was not limited to the outdoor worship, but also included authorization for a limited capacity indoor worship service. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. The same was true, I'll note, when the district court considered the motion for reconsideration. In August, plaintiffs, I believe at least one of the counties, and perhaps the county defendants can corroborate this, at least one of plaintiffs' counties was in a tier higher than tier one, meaning they could also have worship services up to 100 people or 25% capacity. And that was before the district court when considering the motion for reconsideration. But I'll note that in neither situation, the dismissal, and I know it might, forgive me if I'm repeating myself, in neither situation did the district court foreclose leave to amend, to permit plaintiffs to amend their complaint, to explain why they are harmed by the currently operative rules, and why those currently operative rules are unconstitutional.
A plaintiff has argued that the original, and you've acknowledged at least in a technical sense, that the original order by the governor remains in effect. In some place I had the date, but whatever the March date was, I think. And has argued here that the order reflected religious discrimination or reflected a treatment of religion as non-essential as compared to other activities which were deemed more essential. And that, plaintiffs argue, remained the thrust of their claim. Well, if the claim hasn't changed in that respect, why would that part of the claim be moot?
Well, Your Honor, the claim has changed because the original, the executive order N33-20, it says nothing about worship services and it says nothing about other activities. Rather, what it calls for is a total shutdown of all, it's a total stay-at-home order. Everyone must stay in their homes. And then the executive order creates an exception, except as designated by the public health officer. Then a few days later, the public health officer issued a critical infrastructure list. Houses of worship were on that list. But that list has been subsequently superseded by, you know, the various orders from the public health officer, to the point where the currently operative order is the blueprint, and then also the regional stay-at-home order where it applies. So the executive order N33-20 says nothing about, well, the, you know, worship may not take place here, but these activities may take place. It says nothing. All it is a complete, everyone must stay in their homes in the state of California. Roman Catholic diocese, plaintiffs invoke, it's really not the same situation that we had. In that case, the complaint that plaintiffs had offered and the regulatory framework that they had challenged in their complaint was the same regulatory framework that was at issue in that decision in their writ of injunction. The Supreme Court found that simply reclassifying a plaintiff's zones of restriction from, say, the yellow zone or the yellow zone to the orange zone, that wasn't a mooting event. And that would be akin to churches or other houses of worship, or sorry, counties moving up and down the tier, the different tiers in the blueprint. Rather, what we have in this situation was original complaint challenged the original executive order and completely overhauled by an entirely new regulatory framework that again permitted in-person worship services. So Roman Catholic Diocese certainly isn't, it doesn't control the mootness question in this case. And just about the standard for determining mootness, I think in plaintiff's brief, they argue that it must be absolutely certain that that mootness is taking place. That's not the standard that this court has applied for government defendants in Rose Rock and in several of the other cases that we've cited, where plaintiffs have the burden of showing that the wrongful conduct is likely to occur. We think that the court's dismissal should be affirmed. Certainly, there was no abuse of discretion in permitting plaintiffs to dismiss their to amend their complaint. And plaintiffs in not opposing the state's entry of judgment, in a way, this looks more like a case management question that the district court was simply managing its docket. Plaintiffs failed to abide by a court order directing plaintiffs to amend the complaint. In another sense, you can look at the plaintiffs' refusal to amend the complaint and agreeing that judgment should be entered looks more like a voluntary dismissal. So that's entering judgment in those circumstances certainly wasn't an abuse of discretion. To address some of plaintiffs' points about the substance, again, it would be inappropriate for the court to enter an injunction in the first instance, an injunction namely against the blueprint or the regional stay-at-home order. I think I've made clear, and I think the record makes clear, that houses of worship have been deemed essential since day one of the executive order from back in March in the critical infrastructure list. I don't think there's any evidence in the record indicating that Governor Newsom or any state officials considers houses of worship to be entertainment or frivolous in any way. There is nothing in the record indicating that the state has any animus or considers houses of worship to be less essential. As we discussed at length in the previous hearing, the state's restrictions on all activities, including houses of worship, is purely based on the risk that that those activities pose. It has nothing to do with any consideration that houses of worship, or worship or religious worship is less important or, is entertainment, like music entertainment at all. The record simply doesn't reflect that in any way.
Well, on some level, I do want to voice a little concern, and it has less to do perhaps with the position taken by the state than by the position articulated by the district court, which, to be fair, was operating under a legal understanding, which another panel of our court has said has undergone seismic change. And so last summer, the sense was there's lots of room to defer to public health. But the district court's order, from last April, I don't have the particular date here, but it did draw a distinction between I'll say just grocery stores. Without food, we die. And I'm not sure that's a viable distinction. Indeed, I'd be very dubious that that's a viable distinction. And it does suggest that perhaps the district court was approaching this with the notion of, well, whatever churches fall on the spectrum, they don't fall as high as grocery stores, because without food, we die. That's of concern.
Your Honor, the state shares that concern. And again, that order from the district court is not before the court here. It was a denial of a temporary restraining order based on 3 days of time for the state to garner its evidence and prepare an opposition. There's no indication that it's tantamount to a preliminary injunction. No evidence was heard. There were no evidentiary findings. And nothing foreclosed plaintiffs to make their case at a preliminary injunction juncture. So, and certainly plaintiffs haven't presented any evidence that the currently operative blueprint and regional stay-at-home order considers other activities to be of more value than worship. Again, even shopping at the grocery store, the state acknowledges, poses some risk. And that's why the state imposes onerous restrictions on grocery shopping. In the regional stay-at-home order, 35%, and a whole host of employment-related cleanliness, plexiglass retrofitting of what grocery stores look like in order to mitigate that risk. As we went on at length, state's experts unequivocally opine that in the really impacted counties, mitigating efforts like masks, like distancing, is insufficient to mitigate the risk posed by such a risky activity, like an indoor, an indoor congregate activity of a shared communal experience, like a worship service or like a lecture. I bring in the lecture or concert comparison not to say that worship is of the same value, but rather that it poses a similar risk because those activities are similar congregant gatherings for a shared communal experience. I'll note that in the plaintiffs' counsel had invoked, well, in South Bay, they had amended their complaint. As plaintiffs' counsel well knows, having appeared as counsel for South Bay, those amendments were voluntary. It was plaintiffs' counsel who voluntarily amended their complaint twice. And again, in Gish, in the case we're considering right now, the court ordered plaintiffs to amend the complaint. They didn't follow a court order despite having numerous opportunities to do that.
Did it order or did it grant leave?
Granted leave to amend, Your Honor.
I think that's different. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think we can fairly say that plaintiffs disregarded the court order. Court gives them an opportunity, they elect not to take it. That may mean that all they can proceed with is what they've put on the table already, and that would appear to be the argument that somehow the original order issued by the governor discriminated against religion by deeming it not as essential as other things. But and if that's all the argument they persist with, why isn't that argument still viable today? Why is that argument moved?
Your Honor, as I've explained, the executive order N3320, which is the only operative executive order that exists today from their original complaint, doesn't say anything about categories of activities.
And I understand, and that really denies the claim, but it doesn't say why it's moved, and the district court doesn't seem to have engaged with whether that first order was itself discriminatory. Maybe it did. I'll go back and look at that again, because I hadn't framed plaintiff's claim in my mind the way that it maybe have it intended. But given that this is an ongoing dispute and the underlying nature of the dispute hasn't been obscure, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with the notion of saying it's moot like it's gone away, because the basic dispute is still there. We just spent the last hour talking about the basic dispute. So that's my discomfort. Anything you have to offer to me, I'd appreciate.
I understand that, Your Honor. In South Bay, plaintiffs have given defendants and the court and the district court the opportunity to consider the currently operative restrictions. They've explained why they believe the blueprint and the regional stay-at-home order is unconstitutional, and they've also explained why they believe they are harmed by those operative restrictions. In contrast, in this case, in Gish, plaintiffs haven't given defendants or the district court that same opportunity. And despite plaintiffs themselves having had the opportunity to do that, whatever findings the district court had made in the temporary restraining order, denial, those findings aren't appealable. As we've gone on, it was 3 days of briefing, no findings of fact. So again, if plaintiffs still wanted to pursue their claims and present evidence why they believe even the original executive order is unconstitutional, they had plenty of opportunities to do that. To address a comment about opposing counsel's notion that there haven't been outbreaks tied to their churches, this is a similar argument that was made in South Bay that we've addressed. State has presented unrebutted evidence of instances of outbreaks throughout California, including in churches nearby in San Diego and in Los Angeles County as well, in other parts of the state. That's been unrebutted. The court need not prevent the state from taking prophylactic measures to handle a public health, you know, emergency and a public health crisis. I think the district court in South Bay said that would be like preventing, you know, a local health inspector from inspecting any restaurants that hadn't had salmonella or food poisoning outbreaks. So the mere notion that there haven't been any outbreaks, that there's no support that necessarily leads, you know, that state is required to show that each and every church or house of worship in the state of California has led to an outbreak. That would be, you know, an impossible, and there's no requirement that the state needs.
All right, counsel, thank you. You're over your time, and let's see, we'll hear from Ms. Fox next, County of San Bernardino.
Thank you. May it please the court, Deborah Fox, on behalf of the various named County of San Bernardino appellees. I would offer to the court that as to these county named parties, this case is totally moot. You will hear that during appellant's argument, they talked about that order remains in effect, and they also lumped the government together as one and did not make any distinctions between the state, the county of San Bernardino, and the county of Riverside. The only order that remains in effect that was challenged in this lawsuit is the executive order. The order that was issued, the local health order that was issued by the County of San Bernardino, was rescinded on May 8th, 2020. We find that in the record at 3ER349. The language is clear and unequivocal. It says that the orders are hereby rescinded. There has been no indication that the County of San Bernardino has any intent to readopt, to return to reenact the prior local health orders. The only offering that appellants give this court on that point is from a press release also issued on May 25th of 2020. In that press release, the county simply says, we want to advise the community that the health orders of the local nature have been rescinded, that the state orders are in play. At that particular time, the state orders allowed indoor, in-person religious service. So this case, as to the County of San Bernardino, is indeed moot. It is not in dispute. The general rule about the amendment to legislation and the rescission that would make a case moot is in play. There is simply no case or controversy here. I would also add that in the most recent application made by the appellants to the Supreme Court of the United States, in that particular issue as well, they concede this point. They only seek relief as to the state. So accordingly, we would ask that this court affirm in full the order of Judge Bernal, finding this case moot as to the County of San Bernardino. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fogg. Mr. Patel for the County of Riverside.
May it please the court, Deputy County Counsel Ronak Patel for the Riverside County appellees. Riverside County respectfully requests that this court dismiss this appeal because it is moot. As explained by Ms. Fox, appellant's case has been moot against Riverside County since May of 2020 when Riverside County officials rescinded its public health orders. Throughout this case, appellants have commingled the legislative action taken by the state and county appellees and attempted to consolidate them into one legal posture. That tactic is inappropriate because the appellants seek injunctive relief against public health orders that were rescinded 7 or 8 months ago. More importantly, those public health orders have not been reinstated, nor is there any evidence in the record to suggest that they will be reinstated. Appellants argue that Riverside County has pledged the words used by counsel this morning, to enforce the state's COVID-19 restrictions. This alleged promise or pledge, however, again, is nothing more than a press release from May 8th, 2020, wherein Riverside County Board of Supervisors voted to rescind its public health orders and align itself with the stay-at-home orders from the governor. By aligning itself with the state, the county was not promising or pledging to enforce the governor's order. Instead, it was actually rescinding more stringent public health orders that it had enacted, such as a mandatory face covering and social distancing order. In their reply brief, appellants argue that voluntary secession exception does not apply because it was based on an executive order, not some legislative action. As mentioned by the state, an email could suffice, but this argument also fails as to Riverside County because its Board of Supervisors voted to rescind its public health orders, as evidenced by the press release offered by the appellants here. Finally, despite the most recent surge in the spread of COVID-19, which has resulted in a 0.0 ICU capacity in Riverside County, the county has not reimposed its public health orders. Logic would dictate that with this situation at hand and the lack of evidence in the record to suggest that it would do so, there is no reason to keep the county in this case. For these reasons, Riverside County respectfully requests that this court affirm the district court's ruling on mootness. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Patel. Ms. Dillon, you have some time left.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm using headphones now to avoid the problems with audio. I hope you can hear me. So to respond to some of the points that the appellee counsel have made, I was able to touch on part of my mootness analysis, but I wanted to draw the court's attention to the other mootness analysis that is in our briefs and has been previously argued, namely that the activities are capable of repetition yet evading review. And obviously this doctrine stems from the Roe case, but I think that this particular set of facts before the court that has been before the court in all of the COVID cases is a quintessential example of that. And as I made reference to in my initial part of my argument, literally every 6 weeks on average, the government has changed its underlying regulations with no notice typically and with very substantive changes. And so even though at the time
what changes have affected your clients? You would expect, and you would hope there'd be fine tuning, but I'm trying to figure out, okay, for the parties involved here, what changes have affected your clients?
How they may worship, whether they may worship, are they going to be committing a crime by worshiping communally?
How have the changes affected that? I mean, as best I can tell, it's since the blueprint was entered, I learned from state's council, and I assume you will confirm at some point these counties moved from tier two to tier one, but I haven't heard anything that suggests the rules that apply to your clients have been regularly going back and forth. It sounds like there was a time they could worship indoors and then there was a time they couldn't.
Well, there was a time that they could worship indoors, Your Honor. That is correct. Briefly, I think that might have been a period of 45 days or so. I don't have those exact numbers. I apologize for that. But for a period of weeks, they were able to worship with strict numerical hard caps as well as capacity caps in place. Those hard caps have been ruled by the United States Supreme Court in the Brooklyn Diocese case to be not narrowly tailored, and I appreciate that this court may not agree that we reached that analysis here today, but I'm just responding to the court's question. And so
the court's question had to do with, you're trying to tell us this policy changes so often you can't keep up with it, and I haven't found that to be the case for your clients, and I'm waiting for you to tell me why my understanding is mistaken.
Your Honor, in the original lawsuit, and as all the papers reflect, we are attacking the governor's original order and the immediately following initial order. And that is referenced in the governor's initial order. He says, I'm going to set up a system where if you go out of your house and you're not an essential worker, as the California Department of Public Health will tell us who that is, you're a criminal. Okay, so that's the framework that we are challenging.
And that hasn't also been in effect since when?
That is currently the law in California. That is currently
really?
In order.
Really? You're probably not in your home, but I don't think you're under arrest. I mean, seriously, are you trying to tell us that nothing has changed?
Your Honor, I'm an essential worker under my county's regulations. I am in my law firm, and I am following the restrictions for a law firm that apply. So I know I am not committing a crime here, because I am more favored than a person who wants to worship. If I were to attempt to go to my Sikh temple in Fremont across the bay, I would be committing a crime. So that's the distinction. So that framework has always been there. At times, they've had more or less discriminatory application of their rights. But the point on mootness is that the government has committed the shell game into play that continues to be the shell game. And you might turn on
See,
the television
the question,
and the governor changes.
The question I tried to pose 3 minutes ago was, okay, what exactly changes have affected your clients? Because if there is a shell game going on trying to avoid review, that's a problem. But I haven't heard that. You're now telling me you've had the same problem from day one. So maybe the problem isn't the shell game. What is the problem?
I believe I have argued that, and it's in our papers, but to be clear again, all of our moving papers for the injunction and in our verified complaint make reference to the orders then in effect, okay? So there is the governor's order, that's the first order, that is still in effect. The original California Department of Public Health order that came right after that restricted my clients to video worship only. That has been changed to include, despite what counsel for the state says, indeed, people are being threatened with arrest for sitting in their cars outdoors and listening to church services. That changed. And then eventually indoor worship was allowed. And then eventually 99% of the state was put back into a place where no indoor worship was allowed. And I suppose in Lake Tahoe today, you might be able to ski and you might also be able to go to church. That is not a real communal worship opportunity for most Californians. And so those changes are what render the legal review of the government scheme of putting religious activities into a lower tier than commerce, which is indisputable. I don't think the government even challenges that. That evades review. Every few weeks, the government keeps changing the contours of it. And that is why we have had some amendments. And that is why, in our case, we believe it would be futile. Whatever you amended it to, a few weeks later, before you got to the 12B motion, there would be a different one, and it would never get reviewed. That's the fundamental part of the mootness analysis that this court incorporates and this court looks at. And so I would just like to draw the court's attention to that second part of the mootness analysis. And the United States Supreme Court has acknowledged that stroke of the pen changes by an executive, by a governor, by an unelected bureaucrat do not render an illegal policy not subject to review. That is the recent case in the Brooklyn Diocese case. So that's the mootness analysis I want to just underscore for the court. Your Honor, the substantive situation that occurred at the beginning of this case remains the case today. The government has set up a framework that immediately allowed Costco and now various what I would describe as not eating but rather buying clothes at Macy's or other commercial establishments here open. They are much more open or open at all compared to houses of worship. Houses of worship are not open in most of the state of California today. And that invidious distinction was in the governor's order originally. He set up this tier where he decides what's essential and what's not. Religion is essential. And I would say that whatever I thought about that in April, I think about that much more today as a person of faith. And I know millions of Americans agree, and the courts have also agreed that for the government to decree without regard to the Constitution that certain endeavors are more essential than others, when Costco, Safeway, Whole Foods, they are not protected in the Constitution, but our right to worship is, with no right of the government to tell us how to do it in the way that it has happened here. And, you know, when you see the governor saying, as he has and as I don't think will be disputed by the appellees, that we're in a different world now. And this is in the record. The governor said we may never go back to the way we were before. That is why this case, even though the underlying record has, the underlying regulations have changed, it is important for this court to allow review to occur and for these to be redressed so that in the future, when the next disease comes along, we don't have similar situations where judges are telling us that minimal or no scrutiny should apply. That's clearly wrong now, and the appellants deserve a chance to have the court enter that as the record in this case and not a premature dismissal is moot. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. You're also over your time. But thank you. We've heard and understood all of your arguments. So Gish versus Newsom will be submitted, and this session of the court is adjourned for today.